Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is TWiG, This Week in Google, episode 125, recorded December 14th, 2011. Free TNT. This Week in Google is brought to you by Ford, featuring available voice-activated sync with sync services, which enables you to customize your driving experience with personalized news, traffic, and directions. Check it out in the new 2012 Ford Focus and at Ford.com/technology. And by the Newegg Gadget Trade-In Site, powered by Gazelle. Trade in your used gadgets today at Newegg.com/trade and receive a Newegg gift card. That's Newegg.com/trade. It's time for TWiG This Week in Google, the show that covers Google and the cloud with the great Gina Trapani. To my left, Gina's
Hello.
From smarterware.org. Hello, Gina.
Good to be here.
Also the author of Think Up, the app that takes your tweets and parses them, breaks them down, analyzes them, comes up with statistical probabilities, and then spits them out.
Exactly.
Yes.
I eat your tweet for breakfast.
I eat your tweets. Also, we don't have to go to the crappy new Twitter homepage. Thank you.
No. Thank you. I was going to ask you what your opinion was about the redesign, but
I'll tell you in a second. Hi, Gina. New haircut.
Yes.
Cute. Yeah. I like it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Also with me, of course, Jeff Jarvis from the City University of New York. He has a very nice haircut, too. I don't know how
I
you
have
get
a bad hair day, so I'm hiding mine.
Look at him in a beautiful fez. Oh, your hair always looks good. Jeff is a professor of journalism
at I got some.
The City University of New York, also at buzzmachine.com. And with us from Google Plus, Mike Elgin is also here. He's not at Google Plus. He just uses it to great effect.
Occupy Google Plus. That's what he does.
And he's thinking right now. He's thinking. He's coming
I think
up.
He's frozen.
He's coming up with a retort. No,
he's contemplating.
There we go. We got you back, Mike.
And now he's muted. Did you mute yourself, Mike? Merry Christmas. I can't hear you.
Mr. Freeze attacked you. I have taken your movement away.
We'll work on it while you start the show.
Poor Mike. He was also there. He is. He was so set up. He had his seven Canon.
So excited.
D7000 all set up, and
would have been beautiful. Next time, charge the battery. Next time,
let's talk SOPA. I thought SOPA was done. Ropa dopa on SOPA. I went to France thinking all was well, and no, it's back, baby. In fact, the committee vote is tomorrow. This is the Senate, or is it the House? No, it's the House. Who knows? Engine advocacy.
It is the House.
It is the House. IP Protect was the Senate bill, which is gone, I think. Right now, you update me, because I thought it was all gone. I thought we won. I thought 87,000 petitions and calls to members of Congress from Tumblr alone would have just put this thing to bed. But no, they fixed it.
Oh, you utopian, you.
You know, fool that I am. The folks at the movie industry and the television industry and the music industry just went back and rewrote it. And they kind of rewrote it, one article says, to isolate Google. Google, of course, been very vocal against the
stop. Doesn't mean that Google can't still oppose it.
Yeah, but they better.
On a matter of principle, yeah. They have. Well, in fact, they have.
Good.
The founders of Google, Twitter, head of eBay, and Yahoo all came out in vocal opposition.
Engine advocacy.
YouTube, Craigslist, a bunch of people. Not Zuckerberg, though. Well, at least not in this article.
Come on, Zuck.
Where's Zuck?
So SOPA stands for the Stop Online Piracy Act. Well, no one's in favor of online piracy. What's wrong with it? What's wrong with that? Mike, explain to me why we have to do this.
Well, for starters, it's based on the bizarre premise that you can simply establish a law and the rest of the world doesn't respond. So you got to think, what's the response to this? And the response is going to be that the pirates will simply and very quickly and easily figure out how to put up an alternative site in minutes if they're ever taken down. So first of all, it's not going to stop pirate. It's not going to solve the problem that it claims to solve. The bigger problem is what it does to the U.S. government's relationship with essentially censoring the internet. This is a kind of a Chinese type of thing or an Iranian government type of thing where, well, in the case of China, I think is a better case. China censors the internet heavily and famously, but they never do so and they never state the real reasons. They never say, well, we're censoring the internet because we want to prevent the formation of an alternative political party to the Communist Party, or we want to censor the internet to make sure that people who call for democracy and freedom and so on can be heard and so on. What they say is that we're going to cut down on pornography. We're going to crack down on
child pornography. It's yeah. It's always we're doing it for the children.
It's always for the children.
Think of the children.
And in this case, there are all kinds of things that the government could do. And when people bring that up and say, well, you could do X, Y, and Z, they say, well, yeah, but we won't. That's not going to happen. And that's the thing that I'm most concerned about in all this.
Yeah, trust us. We're not gonna create the great firewall of the U.S.
As if politics is going to stop. I mean, you know, somebody, once they have the levers of power, they're going to use them for political
purposes.
It's
the nose under the camel's tent. So the House Judiciary Committee will vote on this tomorrow. Its chairman, Lamar Smith of Texas, says SOPA's opponents are spreading lies. Lawful companies and websites like Google, Twitter, Yahoo, and Facebook have nothing to worry about with this bill.
He said, "It's like that cartoon rooster."
I say, it only applies to foreign rogue websites.
Furners.
So they dropped. This shows their moronic stupidity. They said, well, okay, we'll exempt .com, .net, .org sites. That means it's only foreigners, right? Yeah, except Pirate Bay is .org, you nitwits. And Twit is .tv. So what the hell? Do you not use the internet?
What's an internet?
Internet? Well, I say internet. What's that? Companies like Google have made... I don't know if Lamar Smith talks like this, but he sure as hell ought to.
Oh, he should, yeah.
I say... Companies like Google have made billions by working with and promoting foreign rogue websites. That's why Google's against this. They have a vested interest in preventing Congress from stopping rogue websites. Wait a minute. Lamar Smith, you're saying that Google has a vested interest in protecting piracy and preventing Congress from doing its job.
As there are evidence,
Forbes article trying to argue that Google was the Achilles.
Canadian pharmacy thing. Sorry. Go ahead. I was just going to say that they as evidence, they point out Google's fiasco where they were knowingly allowing shady pharmaceutical ads in the ad network, which is probably a bad example. That's not an example of what they would do.
It's a shame that that did happen. And, they paid $500 million in fines.
Yeah.
The opposition to this legislation is self-serving since they profit from doing business with rogue sites that steal and sell America's intellectual property.
It's what institutions defending institutions. It's the same as we talked about this, I think, when you were gone, Leo. Your good buddy Sarko saying that content has a distribution problem when, in fact, I would argue that content has solved its distribution problem, but he defends the old business model.
I'd like to
Congress
point out,
defending the old business model.
I did not shake Sarko's hand,
and he was crushed.
You know, his assistant for internet affairs or something, Nicholas something, came up to me and said, "Oh, we are so glad to have you." Actually, he's had no accent; he's perfect English. "We're so glad to have you. Thank you for being here." But then Loic was going around with Sarko because you know Loic, the reason this all happened. Loic Lemur, who puts on LeWeb, and by the way, if you ever get a chance to go, this is a great show. This is, I think,
your coverage.
It's like South by Southwest. It's now the news that used to be broken at South by is now being broken in France at LeWeb. And part of that is because of this great upsurge of European startups like Spotify and, SoundCloud. We interviewed some really interesting people who are doing really, I think, innovative, exciting things in Europe. It's the renaissance of internet stuff in Europe. Anyway, so Loic was back when he was a very influential blogger in France. That's how Loic got started. Now he's an entrepreneur. He's a founder of Seismic and lives in the U.S. with his family.
But Loic, when he was back, if this is 10 years or 8 years ago or something, was a very influential blogger and was approached when Sarkozy, before Sarkozy became president, by the Sarkozy campaign. They were looking for some support from bloggers, and Loic advised him on social media strategy. And so he became an insider in the circle. And actually, I haven't asked Loic how he feels about Hadoop and the three strikes laws, but Loic was introducing him around. Scoble met him. Alexia Tsotsis met him. And I, you know, they said, well, go, you know, we could introduce. And I said, you know, I'm going to watch.
Really?
What am I going to say to him? You know, hey, my friend Jeff Jarvis says, will you do any harm? So I'm, you know, I just thought.
So you feel kind of obligated to say something and just.
I didn't want to meet him because I didn't want to have to glad hand him and say, you know, pleasure to meet you. And I didn't want, and I would have felt compelled to say, you know, this stuff has to, I understand that, you know, he gave a fairly long speech off the cuff. He had notes, but he read right off the notes. He said, you know, I know you guys aren't crazy about me. Google just opened in Paris the day before, something like 174,000 square, a huge square office in a beautiful building. I mean, they really have a huge Paris presence now. And he said, you know, I was damned if I did and damned if I didn't. If I went to the opening, there people would have hated me for doing that. If I hadn't done it, if I didn't do it, people would hate me. So he just. But Eric Schmidt, by the way, was in this audience. He shook his hand. He talked to Eric. He said, I need to reach out to you. I need to represent publishers and the rights of publishers. But we need the internet economy. We need you guys. We're struggling here in Europe, and we need the innovation. So he said, I'm just trying to find a balance. And, you know, on face value, that sounds good. But actions speak louder than words.
I got the feeling that one of the interesting things about this story was that, you know, of all the European powers, the major European powers, France is probably one of the biggest challenges in the long run for Google. Germany's another one. But France is a difficult government to deal with because, as we were talking about before, it's hard to control. They like to control everything, like control language. They like to make sure the French language is preserved and all that kind of stuff. And so I got the feeling that Google established its kind of European headquarters in France as a way to influence the French government. And I think Sarkozy's appearance is a kind of an example of that.
You're exactly right. I mean, and they also established a research institute in Berlin.
Exactly.
At the same time, some people, you know, complained about that. But what are you complaining about? You know, you can't win. You don't want Europeans to be the can't win continent. If they're Google's trying to reach out, and I think that's not a bad thing.
Here is Eric Schmidt. He says with President Sarkozy, that is not. I believe actually that's Nicholas, the guy I talked to, Sarkozy's advisor on internet affairs. In their new office, where they have apparently Rubik's cubes,
all
snow
the
globes,
French look the same.
And notice they have those balls that I sit on.
It's so bourgeois.
So bourgeois. So I guess Sarkozy did go to the opening, but it was
yes, he did.
Yeah, he said, "I know how controversial that is." He's walking a fine line. He's not very popular in France either, by the way.
He's on his way out.
Yeah. Although the fear is that someone even more rightist will be elected.
The week before, I was in Paris and spoke at La Cantine, which is a great incubator space on the book because it's just out in France as of last week. And, you know, I took swipes at Sarkozy and, you know, nobody swiped back for me for that. That was fairly popular to do.
Here's a picture of Sarkozy and Eric cozying up, so to speak.
How short is he?
Tiny. He's Regis Philbin short.
Oh, wow.
Actually reminds me a lot of Regis. If Kelly's still looking
okay, wait.
After the election.
You have to do Regis with a French accent. Please, Leo.
What's the king about? I don't know what you're talking about, Leo.
I don't know if I can mix those two together.
How does it work? The internet?
He's Yiddish.
Philbin.
It's all mixed. Well, Philbin is kind of has that. Anyway, he's yay high. And like a lot of, like Regis, very natty, well put together. And like Regis, had heavy pancake makeup on. So that's my only observation. He seemed like quite a nice fellow. I'm sure that he's a perfectly fine fellow. And, you know, politics is complicated. And I'm sure he believes that he's representing the interests of France.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he does. Yeah, I believe that.
Google.
But he defines France as the power structure.
Well, and that's a little... I think after the currency deal that they just made in Europe, it's pretty clear that all the power is in Germany. And most of the euros are in Germany.
When I got to Germany, I read in Welt, which is the newspaper, saying that all of Europe learns, it basically becomes German.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, do they see the irony in saying that?
Yeah. Well, if you can't win one way.
Well, yeah, that's the great irony.
Currency reform.
It's a united Europe and Germany's in charge.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a certain logic to that, which is that Germany is the biggest country in Europe, and it's also the most industrialized. France may disagree with that, but the thing that has prevented Germany from being the clear leader in Europe for all these years has been the legacy of World War II. And every decade that goes by, that restriction fades a little bit. So.
Yeah. Yeah,
but Mike, what's interesting about this to me is, and this is what I tried to think about in terms of a beta culture, is that yes, Germany is the industrial miracle. It's so far, even though there's a lot of good development going on in Berlin, is it yet the digital miracle? And will its culture support a digital beta fail in public culture?
If they can handle Street View, can they?
Well, exactly, precisely. And can France be farther ahead? The UK, which is probably a little more fertile for digital, but now they're more separated from Europe because of Cameron and what he did with this agreement. Eastern Europe, it's really interesting to see that in an internet world, if there's going to be a center of digital in Europe, where is it going to be? And I don't think that's at all settled. I mean, Loic's trying to help France.
Right. I think Le Web is pan-European, and it's very. International, half the people there are Americans, more than half. Mm-hmm. Loic told me once that the original plan, and I think this, originally it was called Le Blog, by the way.
Right.
It came Le Web a few years ago. The original plan, I think, was to bring American entrepreneurs to Europe to have some of that gold the rub off. And I think mission accomplished. There are some issues in Europe. There are many different languages. They don't have a venture, capital infrastructure like we do here. They maybe have some risk aversion. But I think that's changing very rapidly. And the testament to that is the number of very successful startups. From Finland, you've got Rovio with Angry Birds. From Sweden, you've got Spotify. From Germany, you've got SoundCloud and on and on and on. And these companies are doing very well. They're really exciting American-style startups. That's one of the things that's interesting, mm-hmm.
Well, really good point, Leo, the way Germany used to do it, and I used to invest for my old employer in German companies, is they would tend to copy the American company, which wasn't a bad strategy.
There are a couple of companies in Germany that did unabashedly do that.
They've done that, and it's not a bad strategy because then you get bought by the one you copy.
Right.
But all the list you just gave, and this is vital, all the list you just gave is original companies that are doing new things, and I think that's critically important, and that's the way they're going to win.
Daniel Ek of Spotify is very interesting. He said, well, one of the reasons I did this is Sweden was becoming known as the pirate country. He said, probably because of the penetration of high-speed internet, penetration of high-speed internet. We had Pirate Bay. We had that's where Kazaa came from. And so he said, I love music, and I kind of wanted to create a company that promoted legitimate use of music.
Mm-hmm.
And Spotify, there's no question, is in my mind, is taken over the world.
The startup scene in Europe is more robust than people think it is. And the reason for that is that when you look at you look at the United States versus Europe, people tend to look at individual countries in Europe, whereas the United States, of course, isn't a single country. And so comparing U.S. to Europe, it's not a comparison that happens all that often. Also, the bigger issue is that the giant companies, the Amazon, Google, Apple, Facebook, and so on, if you remove those from the U.S. technology scene and just compare the smaller companies in the U.S. versus the smaller companies in Europe, Europe is, it's a vital segment of the technology industry.
Oh, and especially with apps. One of the things that's really happening is it's the barrier to entry for creating apps and raising, crazy money. TaskRabbit just raised, we interviewed TaskRabbit, Leah Buskin, they just raised $28 million for an app that basically has somebody do your shopping for you. And the barrier, now that's a U.S. company, but the point is that the barrier to entry to creating these is very low, and the potential win is huge. So we met a ton of new apps, and it was very exciting, very vital. You don't have to be working on the next Microsoft Word or even the next Spotify or Skype. You could be working on an app, and we saw a lot of people there. That was actually really exciting. To me, it felt and what's interesting, a number of American companies made announcements there. Evernote announced two new apps. Flipboard announced Flipboard for the iPhone, which is huge. Spotify announced, and this was funny because they had the week before done an event in which they announced apps for the Spotify platform, and they didn't mention this. And they came on stage at Le Web to say, oh, and by the way, we're going to do radio, which, you know, if I were Pandora, I'd be shaking in my boots. But most, I think most telling, in the past, Marissa Meyer has always come and been the flagship representative of Google at this conference. In fact, she got engaged at Le Web 4 years ago and goes back with her husband each year because it's, you know, it's a romantic thing for them. But
Eric, a merger,
how geeky,
an acquisition?
How geeky is that? Yeah. Geeky? That would be a
merger.
Merger.
Merger, okay.
Let's call it a merger. Marissa might have had the wherewithal to acquire a husband, but I think
that's true.
I do believe it was an equal partnership. But the fact that Eric Schmidt was there, and not even the keynote. The keynote was Karl Lagerfeld.
Isn't that wacky?
He was of Chanel, but he's doing a deal with another company to do a Lagerfeld line online only.
Yep.
I know, that was really wacky.
Wait, of Chanel?
Chanel. It's
not anymore.
Let me look it up.
But aren't they suing? Weren't they involved in that case that they took over those
handbags?
Domains?
And, yeah.
But like the handbag company?
That's another thing.
That's another thing.
Lagerfeld
okay.
is no, I don't think he designs anymore for Chanel. I don't know what he does.
Where does he buy those shirts?
He's such a strange looking fellow. And he says, I do not use the internet. However, I will be selling many things on the internet, you know. He's a very that's one of the things that's fun about Le Web. You know, South by really is about Austin and really has that Austin feel. This has very much a European continental feel.
The barbecue
your coverage may definitely maybe
the barbecue's terrible, but the wine is excellent. And caviar and pâté. They serve pâté and wine. At the conference for lunch.
They serve pâté and wine to the French soldiers yes, stationed right. abroad.
Yeah, it wouldn't be lunch without pâté and wine. Lagerfeld is making an audacious bid to make history in fashion and technology. He's going to launch a lower priced line named Carl. £200 jacket instead of £25,000 jacket and it'll be all online. You can only buy it online. He says,
"Who of this group, Gina? When you go buy clothes, how do you buy them?"
Oh, I'm not a fashion person at all. I mean, what do you mean by brand?
Do you ever go into stores anymore? That's what I'm asking you simply. When was the last time you were in a department store?
Oh, a department store?
Are you asking her? Is she the token woman?
I'm just going to go around. I'm going to ask you all. Don't worry. Okay. Gina's been in silent, so I'm asking her.
Yeah, I apologize. I'm in an antihistamine haze today. I haven't been in a department store in forever, but I'm really not like a fashion person at all. I'm not a good example of a woman my age, I think. As little as possible. I'm the type that I find the stuff that I like, and then I just order a bunch of them online.
I think all geeks
need that
like
underwear
that.
Thing we guys have.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Oh, yeah, man packs. Love the man packs.
I need a woman pack.
Mike, do you ever shop in person anymore?
Well, my wife does all of my shopping. I say, I need another shirt, and then a day or two later, one appears. And it's a great system. It works for me. But what's more interesting is that recently my wife has discovered the joy of buying footwear online. And, you know, because you can return
Zappos
things because
great.
Of the growth of free shipping and stuff, and she's just been buying boots like it's going crazy, you know. And so she's getting sucked into the whole online thing, and it's really working for her.
I buy all my shoes at Zappos. Absolutely.
Zappos is great.
Where I'm headed here is that retail's gone online first. The designers who resisted because they thought it was cheapening them now have no choice but to.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They got to figure out the appropriate way to do it. You're not going to buy a $25,000 jacket online, obviously.
The new new Karl Lagerfeld line, I've had on the screen here, it's Karl is coming, is at Net-a-Porter.
Yes. Which is an amazing company.
Is it?
It was bought by Richemont, which is a very high-end company that has all kinds of wildly expensive watches and fashion and things like that. And they realized that they were kind of trapped with, I spoke for them once in South Africa, but they realize they're kind of trapped with their retailers, and Net-a-Porter gets them out of that. And Net-a-Porter does, you know, it's like...
They've got Jimmy Choo, Yves Saint Laurent, Donna Karan, Chloe Burberry, I mean, Bottega Veneta. They've got everybody here on this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing is that I would think, high-end fashion would really love the internet, because that whole industry is based on what's really, really new. And it's really expensive because it's brand new. Nobody else has got it. And it's going to be gone in 6 weeks.
Right.
And that's perfect for the internet. You just have to make sure you get the kinds of people who buy that kind of stuff online. And this guy with his Karl line is not helping by saying that he doesn't use the internet. He should be really embracing the internet.
They even have, look at this, Net-a-Porter Live. You can watch what people are buying as they buy. 16,262 people are on this website right now buying crap.
Friction-free snooping.
So, wow. You know, up to now what the haute couture companies have used the internet for, and that's actually been very successful for them, is kind of their remainders. They don't want to sell the old stuff at a discount because it cheapens the name. So they go to sites like fab.com. There are a whole bunch of sites.
Gilt.
G-I-L-T.
Yeah.
Shame. Apathy. Didn't Google have a site like this as well?
They did. They had a fashion site at some point.
So they did? What they can do, somebody explained this to me.
It was a visual matching thing. So
yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Right.
But
like.com.
What was it?
Like.com.
Like.com.
That's right.
So, and I figured Marissa must have had a lot to do with this because she's very focused on, I know fashion's a big deal for her. Yeah. Like.com, I guess, is gone.
I think they folded it into Google Image Search and took away
the
commerce thing.
Boutiques. That's it. I think you're right. Let's see.
Yes, I signed up for that. Yeah.
There's the fashion voice coming in.
Also gone.
Thank you, Eileen, representing.
Rue La La, Outlook.
Rue La La. I'm a member there.
All
I like
over that.
Yeah. So somebody explained this to me, that the whole deal is they want it. They got to get rid of this old stuff. But they don't want a deep discount in the stores because it really hurts sales. So they have initially been using the internet as a dumping ground. That's where they put the reduced cost stuff on Rue La La, places like that. But I think they're discovering, wait a minute, maybe we should also be selling the new stuff.
I think your point about I think it was your point, Mike, about being current. They should be more than current. I'm waiting for the first designer to discover the wonders of Kickstarter. If enough people want this, we'll make it. If you don't, we won't. And if you buy early, you get it before everybody else. I mean, there's a great system of benefit there that people could have.
Yeah.
It's a shame that boutiques.com is gone, and they've replaced it with, they said, go to Google product search, which is not where women go. That's where guys who wash their hair with soap go. That's not.
Right. I think the last time I went to a Macy's was I needed a suit. I had a meeting at the White House, and it was like, I need a suit before I go to D.C. So I went to Macy's.
I need a suit. Help me, Macy's. Help me, Nordstrom.
Exactly.
All right.
The perils of working at home.
Somebody just bought a pair of flip-flops in Sydney. I just want you to know, from Net-a-Porter. I love the name Net-a-Porter. It's a completely obscure pun that I guess fashion people would get. I love how it's zipping around. Somebody just bought a pair of slacks in West Africa.
I'd like to see returns.
Yeah, wouldn't that be fun? A shirt named Acne. Good. Just purchased in Egypt.
You really want to see who's buying this stuff.
Though. I would love to. Oh, look, somebody in France just bought a Michael Kors.
Hot boots.
Yeah. Ooh, those are good.
Ooh.
Those boots are made for walking Cuban.
Handbag just sold to the United Kingdom in London.
Oh, man, this goes beyond Glee, guys.
Oh, Tori Praver, Lucy's smocked bandeau swimsuit just sold to Stockholm, Sweden. This could be a whole TV show right here. Strapless crepe jumpsuits.
Leo,
yeah.
I'm telling you this week in fashion. It's
look
New
at
York
those
show.
Python and suede sandals just sold to Chicago. My goodness.
Hey, so how about your Galaxy Nexus?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, let's talk about
thank
the
you for
Nexus.
Redirecting me.
Let's
back
do that.
To Earth.
I mean, I'm really anxious to see it myself.
So I ordered this, speaking of online commerce, from a British site, Expansys. Now, have they announced Verizon when it'll be available? And we know it's Verizon. They still have. I thought for sure.
Supposedly the 15th now.
I thought for sure the 9th. So I'm glad I actually held. I almost canceled this. I thought, well, when I get back, I'll be able to get it. So it did arrive. Here it is. This is the Galaxy Google Galaxy Nexus running ice cream sandwich. So if you've
unlocked.
Seen, if you've unlocked and GSM only, it's not LTE. So if you've
how
seen,
how much did it cost you?
$749 US. Ooh. Well, that's ooh. About that's actually about right. Anyway, I don't know if it's right or not. It looks very similar to the Galaxy S2 from Samsung. This is similar back. It's a little bit, I don't know if you could tell, but it's slightly curved. It's got the bulge at the bottom for the antenna. Okay, so ice cream sandwich really is the big change here because everything else is, it's a big screen. Oh, and one other thing, and it's 1280 by 720. It's the highest res screen out there, but I'm going to tell you a little bit about that. There's a caveat. First, though, I turned on the face recognition. Now, let's see how well this works.
A demo that might actually work.
Nope, couldn't find my face. So it fails back to this. Let me try it again. Because go ahead, put me on camera one. Because the truth is, it works better if I'm in a more. It's this over the shoulder shot is not ideal. Okay. But if I just do this, and it has to be. By the way, I tried this in the dark, doesn't work. And there, it unlocked it. So it takes a couple of seconds. It's cool. It fails pretty quickly over to just the swipe. I'll leave it on.
So you have to hold it up in front of you. So you lift your arm and hold it on, like the shot straight onto your face is the one that's most likely.
Seems
to
be, yeah.
Another stupid thing people will be doing in the street.
Yeah. And you do spend a lot of energy getting it just right, and it worked again. I was just swooping around. So glasses, I think, kind of didn't like. I have to try it again with my glasses on. But and sometimes it spends an inordinate amount of time, and then it says, "I don't know who you are." So it's not, you're not going to, it's a gimmick. It's not, but it's a cool gimmick. And in every other respect, it's a snappy phone. This is, there's a few things that are immediately throw me on about ice cream sandwich. One is there's no physical buttons anymore. The three buttons that are generally at this edge of the screen, although they're not real buttons. They're on the screen, so they could move around anywhere. You can barely see it. There's the back button. There's the home button. And there's a recent apps button. If you've used Honeycomb, you'll recognize that from the tablet interface. That's the recently run apps button. Search, not here anymore. It's up here, but it is on every page. And you don't have to press and hold. It's just one tap, and you'll get the voice dictation and the search capabilities that you're used to. Although this has been much upgraded. We're going to talk in a little bit about a new Google voice dictation system that I think they're going to implement soon on this. I have to say Siri quality dictation. I'll show you in a second. Well, I can show you that now. Let me start a message here. New message. Yeah, I don't want to show phone numbers. Thank you. Let's send one to Gina here. So the voice dictation, if you're using, I don't want to show any phone numbers, do I?
I'm not showing it.
No, don't show it. Don't stop. Oh, my God. That's no.
I'm not showing it. I'm showing you.
Okay. So here we go. Here we go. So I'll do the dictation thing here. So there's a dictate. This is the ICS keyboard. But one thing they've done differently now with the dictation is it starts typing almost immediately. So it's quicker to make corrections because you can see what it is typing and change it as you go. And as you can see, it hasn't made a single mistake yet! Exclamation mark.
That's amazing.
Huh, that's really nice.
I think this is comparable to Siri.
I think Siri's actually gotten less accurate.
Well, and Siri's down all the freaking time.
I know.
Which means if it's accurate or not, if it doesn't work, I really like Siri, and I was using it a lot to dictate on the iPhone 4S. This works.
This so one. And that's making the request over the network, Leo, as you speak.
I can't tell. I think it is, but boy, it's again.
Fast.
It's fast.
It's really fast.
This
that's
is
the thing
almost
about it.
Dictating in real time, which means, I mean, I do love the fact that I can see the results as I go, which makes it much easier to catch a mistake before you've gone on and on and on, and then you have to go back and so forth. But this is, I don't know how this could possibly be online. It's doing it practically in real time. This is like drag and dictate on a desktop.
Can't you go into airplane mode and see?
Oh, I could, but that would be too easy.
It does seem a little too fast for...
I'll go into airplane mode in a second. But, okay, you want to know the negatives. And the only negative, and it's a hardware negative, it's not an ice... let me talk about ice cream sandwich briefly. Let me finish that, and I'm going to tell you what I don't like about this phone. A couple of things that are different. We've got the bar down here. These are easily customizable. When I go to the apps page, it slides sideways, not up and down. And widgets are here. They're no longer on press and hold on the desktop. And this is just like Honeycomb, where you get a preview of the widget. And if you want to put a widget on any page, you press and hold it, and you can drag it around from page to page like that. The Google widgets are resizable. So if I've decided, this is the Google Plus widget, if I decided, you know, I don't want it to occupy the whole page, I do have handles that I can drag it and make it resizable. There have been third-party launchers like Launcher Pro that give you that capability, but it's nice to have it built into the OS. Unfortunately, it doesn't apply to all widgets, just to a few, and no non-Google widgets that I can tell. Although, I guess as time goes by, more people will release versions.
And devs just have to catch up.
Yep. The folder look is new. It's a circle, and it works like the iPhone does, where you drag an icon on top of another one, it will immediately create a folder. Doesn't name the folder until you open it up, and then you can name it there like that. I like that. I think that, in fact, as you can see, I'm using folders a lot to give me access to more things on the desktop. It comes with, interestingly enough, this is the vanilla Google experience. It comes with a Google folder when you out of the box with all the Google apps in a single folder. That's kind of smart, I think, on Google's part.
Any redone apps in there because of ice cream?
Gmail looks the same. Yes, the contacts. I'm not going to launch contacts because I don't want to show you phone numbers. But the contacts is very nice. Lots more space. It's white. It's got a light background. It looks more like kind of a Rolodex. It's nice. I think they've done a really good job with the contacts app. I think the Maps app is the same.
Google Plus different?
Google Plus is different only in the respect that it's got a new widget that is a full screen widget. But the Google Plus app is really just an app.
Yeah. Right?
But I do like the fact that I can do a full screen scrolling widget of Google Plus right on my desktop. Widgets are one of the things that really distinguishes Android.
Well, this I'm sorry. Go ahead, Leo.
This is not a widget. This you cannot get rid of. This yeah. Google search bar. So Google's really taking a front page. They're really saying, no, we want some real estate right on the front of the top of the screen. So now 1280 by 720, but you're going to lose this and you're going to lose this because of the buttons. So the available screen real estate is exactly the same as any other phone. The only negative to the super high resolution is that sometimes this is Path, which, by the way, I love. Thank you, Dave Morin, for making it available on Android. The typeface on this is... Yeah, I'm glad they have that new font because it is tiny, and right now there's Eileen. There's no way to make it bigger. So
here's the coolest thing about ice cream sandwich that hardly anybody talks about. And
yes.
I buttonholed the head of the ice cream sandwich project at Google I/O, and asked him point blank, "Is there anything that would prevent somebody from using this on a desktop computer?"
Oh,
and he said, "No, nothing."
Ah. Well, we know the Asus Transformer, for instance, is really kind of a laptop with Android on it.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
And I've seen people using Honeycomb, frankly. They don't have ice cream sandwich yet. Somebody tell me that I can turn off, and I don't know where I'll look at display, I can turn off that Google search in the settings. They have reorganized settings in a very much nicer way. So we have wireless and networks here. I could see data usage in a very granular way that I couldn't see before, including set a bar for my warning. So I set it 2 gigabytes right now, but I can make it more or less. And I could see which apps are using the most amount of data. I think that's the kind of granularity people are going to need more and more. These are the device-specific control panels. Somebody's calling me because they know my phone number. So you see, this is that honeycomb. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I
don't care if we show their number. Oh,
okay.
This is that honeycomb slider. You see, I can slide left or right to pick up or not. Developer options. Because it's a Google Experience phone, we have USB debugging, stay awake, allow mock locations, desktop backup passwords, strict mode. There's a whole bunch of developer options in here. So clearly this is going to be the developer phone for Google going forward. Makes sense. There's NFC is built into here, by the way.
Right.
And apparently a barometer. I don't know what you do.
That's right. I forgot about the barometer.
No app yet is taking advantage of this, but I want to know what the barometric pressure is, and apparently that's in here. Battery life exactly the same. Here's the negative, the stupid Pentile display. So even though this is Samsung says it's a Super AMOLED display, it is not as deep and rich as the Galaxy S2. Path is a good example because it puts up this white screen. You can see banding in here. You can see pixelation in here. When you turn it up to bright, it looks better. The brighter you get it, but of course you don't want to do that. You want to use automatic brightness to protect your battery life. It's not a consistent color. Pentile is absolutely not as good as the Super AMOLED. But I love the resolution. And when you're watching videos on this thing and you turn it sideways, it's a nice 4.6 something screen. So there's definitely – I think this is a good size.
What's been your default phone lately, Leo?
I've been using the iPhone 4S a lot.
Right, so how would you compare this to that?
The screen is not as good as the iPhone 4S. It's roughly the same pixel per inch. It's a little bit less. But the iPhone 4S color is much more accurate, and I think that's a little bit of a negative on this. Camera's comparable, not exactly as good. There's a nice new feature in the camera that actually I've been using a lot. It works really well. Motorola and others have been putting features into the camera software they ship with Android, but this is the Google camera, and it now has a pano. So there's film and there's pano, and if I want to take a pano picture, I literally just rotate the camera. I don't even have to press the take button, and it just records the images and stitches them and does a fairly nice job. I found artifacts, but the trick is to go slow enough so that it does seem to. I've posted a couple on where did I put them? I guess.
By the way, Euronerd says that the barometer is used for altitude measurement, which improves GPS accuracy.
Right, right. That makes sense. Hmm. Yeah, they're certainly on path. So there's one one in my gallery. There's one I took, and here's another one. It's kind of neat to be able to do a pano without, quickly and built in.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. I like that feature a lot.
Yeah, I'll certainly do a lot more panos.
Chase the pano.
What I'd like to see is the this feature replacing the degree of wide angle. I'd like to see flatter lenses as the default in phones, and then you can capture a whole room by panning around.
That's
that would be better
idea
than the weird wide angle lenses that currently exist.
These are all, I would guess around 24 millimeter lenses. They're fairly wide, which means it's fine if you're in close, and for most uses of a camera phone, that's what you want. But if you're going to take a picture of a sunset, the sun is being, the moon is being, and so it's not great for distances. On balance, this is a great phone. I wish the display were better. That's probably my only negative. I've been very happy with it. It does get really hot on the back of it.
Which is a feature in the winter.
Sure. It could be a hand warmer and a phone. And some people have complained. MG Siegler complained about, of course, he loves the iPhone. Complained about how chintzy this back cover is.
You get used to that.
Samsung Galaxy S2.
It's the same
problem.
You get used to it.
And I just pointed out, well, MG, because, who would want to ever change their battery?
It should be glass.
You should just make it glass and glue it down.
iPhone 4S user, I'd like to change my battery.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, you know what I do with the iPhone 4S? I have a big Mophie juice pack.
Right.
And you know what? Everybody at Loewe practically had a Mophie juice pack. If you're going to have an iPhone 4S, you have to have an external battery. It's like carrying around a car battery with you.
Yeah.
But you know, this is not great battery life either, but at least I can order another battery and have it charged up and pop it in there, which is a lot more convenient than the Mophie. So, on balance, yeah, I like it.
Can you go to airport mode?
Oh yeah, let's do that.
Mode?
Oh yeah, let's do the experiment.
Let's do the dictation experiment. Siri,
a rare scientific moment from me. So,
Siri, as you know, won't even set an alarm without network access. Siri says, "No, yeah. No, everything I do must be sent back to the mothership." So we'll show you now. Here's an interesting thing: they've hidden. It used to be airplane mode would be right on top there. It isn't anymore. You have to click the more button.
It's henceforth known as the Alec Baldwin button.
Yeah. I am
even
not
if,
playing.
Even if you hold the power button?
If you hold the power button, you get those choices. Silent, okay. Airplane, and power off. That's how you do it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. All right. Hide my screen. I don't want to show any phone numbers. I can't remember. Here, I'll just pull it over here.
Sorry.
I can't remember. Oh, good. No, I'm still in this bogus message. So let's continue on with my dictation. Nope. It's not even, you can't even press it. The button is gone.
Well, that is, I mean, that's a pain, but it is so miraculous how the speed is.
You need to be online.
I wonder if it's not using both at the same time, spinning off the job locally and remotely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems so fast. I don't know how. Well, maybe
I wonder, how does it behave on a slow connection or a connection right. That's just flaky and going in and out? It's interesting. Well, it was super fast. Were you connected to the Wi-Fi, Leo? Or
yes. Yeah.
Okay.
So let me turn off Wi-Fi. Let's do one more experiment. If you will all bear with us, we'll turn off Wi-Fi. So now I'm going to be on T-Mobile's HSPA Plus 3G. And let's dictate now. So the good news is the dictation button is back on, but as you can see, with 3G dictation, it isn't nearly as fast.
It's a bummer.
Well, it's not awful, though, and what I do like is it types as you go.
Yeah.
So, and a big improvement over the Gingerbread implementation of dictation is it lets you continue until you press done, which is what Siri does as well. The problem I have with Gingerbread is if you pause, it says, oh, no, you're done, and starts recognizing. So I think this is actually really good. This is not too bad. I would say it's about 5 seconds behind, maybe 10. It definitely is tied to the speed. So yeah. So it is going out to...
But it's neat that they optimize it as best they can. That's,
yeah.
That's
cool. They do.
Can you use it for any... in the run-up, we have some kind of story. Can you use it, number one, in any... app or most apps,
yes,
remade for it.
That's part of the keyboard.
Okay, and then second, is it good for commands? You know, open email.
Yes.
Send this message.
And in this respect, it is superior to Siri. Siri, for instance, will not open an app. This will open apps. I've always liked the fact that I could say something like, "Listen to Bob Dylan," and because I have Spotify on here, you tell it what you want to have that listen command go to. But because I have Spotify on here, I can play any music that is on Spotify, which is fantastic, all kind of automatically.
Search and how do you cue right it now, that so. You're going to talk like you just did?
You have to. And, you know, remember, there was used to be search buttons at the bottom. The search button is now always at the top.
Right.
So.
I'd say that.
Yeah.
Was it weird to get used to having two layers of buttons at the bottom of the screen?
Yeah, I wish they had physical buttons still. I don't really understand why we're using screen real estate for these buttons. You know, I'll give you an example. When you go to camera mode, the camera kind of rotates. You can't really see these buttons. It turns the buttons into little dots, but they're still there. It's not like they're rotating them to different sides of the screen. They're always in the same position. So these could easily have been physical buttons. Maybe that's a way of saving money. I don't know. And I don't really – maybe others like this, but the recent apps button, I don't find that particularly useful. But maybe some do. I know that, you know, it's on Honeycomb too, and they kept it in Ice Cream Sandwich. So there must be some reason that they do that. It's cool. I mean, there are thumbnails of every app that's running. So that, you know, that's kind of cool. But I don't need that on a phone. That's more of a
desktop. It's surprising that they bumped the search button for that. Like right now, when you build an app, you can attach search, like your internal app search, to the global search button. But that global search button doesn't exist anymore. Is that right now?
It doesn't, because it's only on the desktop. You're right.
It's only on the home screen, right?
So well, it's on every screen, but it's not. It's not in an app. Well, let me see. Let me see. I don't know. I think you're right. Let me launch Foursquare.
It goes away.
Because so Foursquare uses. By the way, that's another point. Is Foursquare does get to use the whole screen except for this little row on the bottom. The other thing is the menu command now is this dot dot dot. It looks like a sideways ellipsis, and it there is inconsistency about where it lives. Sometimes it's down here. Sometimes it's up there. I just really prefer physical buttons that don't move. But that's now, you know, Google made a big point about it. Hugo Barr made a big point about that. No, we don't have physical buttons anymore. They're gone.
Apple envy. Right.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
It's very Jobsian. And you still have volume control. You still have an on-off button. I don't see the point.
If an app is designed for ICS or Honeycomb in ICS, it will use the action bar, which is having that menu drop down on the bar across the top of the app. But if
that's
it's not...
That's what you liked is the action bar. Right.
Right, right. So that's why they show that ellipsis. That's like the old school apps. That's just backwards compatibility with the old menu button.
Got it. And it's inconsistently
placed. I wonder if they're trying to get people to use voice recognition instead of lunging for the search bar, again, out of Siri.
But the problem is it's the voice recognition button is on the search bar.
Right. So how do you invoke search?
True.
Like I'm thinking about my app my to-do app. It's like, how do you launch search within an app? I guess you'd have to do it from the action bar, or you'd have to probably put a search button on your action bar.
That's what you do.
Interesting.
That's probably what they want. Anyway, it's a nice phone. It's not the Jesus phone. But I can understand Google's going. I have to say, for 2 days, I was uncomfortable with ice cream sandwich. It just was. It was different enough, and not. It didn't feel like better, just different. I'm coming to get used to it. Maybe it's better. I don't know. There's some things that are certainly better. The camera app, by the way, very fast on this, faster than an iPhone 4S. So that's nice. Uh-huh.
Gallery loads.
I'll show you the gallery. Look at me. That's me. See? No.
audibly disappointed.
I want it to work. So let's look. Where did I put the gallery? I guess I don't have it out.
The sounds of an Android user.
Oh, the new calendar, by the way, very nice. That's one thing that has been changed. The calendar, and this is the contact list style. It's white now. I think the calendar is much better. Very modern feeling. That's one thing that's aesthetically, I think, gotten really, really nice.
Yeah, it looks nice.
Yeah, it's much better. They already had a very nice gallery app, and so that's not changed a lot. Let's launch it. Da, 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 da. Yeah, it has changed. I take it back because this is a tile interface now, which is nice. I like this. They've done a nice job. Thumbnails at the bottom.
Yeah, and snappy.
You see how fast that is? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, you certainly don't ever feel like, oh, this is laggy. So I think that you can see I've customized it already quite a bit. I have the beautiful widgets. By the way, Google, 10 cents. Right now, a lot of apps are 10 cents on the market, including beautiful widgets, which everyone should have. Is there any way to know that on the market?
To know what?
What's 10 cents?
Yeah, there's a
10
a page.
Cents button.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that's changed is now we have apps, widgets, and there's always a market button on the, just kind of like the bookstore, you know, it's just how it should be. You should always have a market.
So right there.
Set search.
So right there, premium apps, 90%
off, 2 days left.
And every day it changes.
Oh, so check this. This is their response to Amazon's app of the day, free app of
but
the
I think
day.
It's limited time.
Right.
Nexus arrives, Verizon tomorrow, $2.99.
Tomorrow, $2.99.
Go to thenextweb.com.
Oh, my goodness. That is expensive. So $7.49 for unlocked GSM doesn't seem so bad.
Verizon will deck out with mobile hotspot service for an additional $20.
Yeah.
Additional.
Yeah, well, they've been doing that before.
Yeah, they have. So that's supposed to be the 4G LTE network.
Right. I don't mind not having 4G on here. I'm just rationalizing. The browser. Oh, I like the browser. Let me show one more thing. I know this is dragging. One more thing. The browser. Share location. Yes, thank you. Whoops. So this is why I don't like soft buttons. It's too easy to push them. Yeah. Share location. See, it's right by the button there, so it's very easy to do that. The browser now has, so you saw I drag it down to see the address bar. This is Windows. So if you have multiple windows open, you'll see them here. Bookmarking, sharing was there as well. And this is that dot, dot, dot menu. I don't like it that it, you don't know exactly where it's going to be, right?
It's so weird it goes bottom to top, yeah.
Yeah. I do like the browser, though. It's very, very snappy. Actually, those tabs are part of the Google. I used to have a variety of third-party, like Dolphin and Xscope apps used for browsing. I'm sticking with this one. It's good. Nice job.
So when you pull down, you can see the address bar. But if you open a new tab, it shows the thumbnail, right? It's not like a tab the way it is in Dolphin. Okay.
Right. So that's plus here, right? So that's
right.
A new tab. And let's see. Where is it? What should we render? How about what's a
Galaxy Nexus?
I want to go to a site with Flash.
Oh,
Vimeo? You saw this? I mean, you feel how snappy this is. Mm-hmm. It really, I feel it's actually snappier than my desktop. It feels pretty good. It's on Wi-Fi, I should point out.
I hope the tablets are this snappy.
Yeah, no kidding. What is the processor in this? Is it
1.2?
I don't remember.
I'm not sure.
Let's see if I get this to play. Maybe it's not going to. So maybe it's Flash. Anyway, there you go. That's my extremely lengthy and detailed review.
No, it was a good tour.
It was a rehearsal for our product show.
Yeah,
tomorrow.
we're gonna do this on the product show. It's one of the things we're gonna review on the product show, including one of these new Ultra Mobile PCs. I think it's probably the best Android phone out there. But if you already have a Galaxy S2, do not feel the need to jump. Especially since I think you'll get ice cream sandwich pretty quickly. Especially since there's CM9.
Yeah.
It might be the way to put it on a lot of phones is use CM9, CyanogenMod, mod, instead of official ICS. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk about this is a quiz question. How many private jets do Larry, Sergey, and Eric have between them? Just a little quiz question. But before we do that, let's talk about my private jet, my Ford Mustang. I'm a big Ford fan, as you know. In fact, earlier today, I was test driving a Fiesta, the Focus, and then later today, I think I have a 2012 Mustang to try. And in every case, we're trying out the new Ford Sync and my Ford Touch. And these Sync services, which are really awesome, if you haven't tried these. So what you do is you press the button again. Steering wheel, right? Eyes on the road, steering wheel. You press the button on the Focus. It's a little paddle behind the wheel. I like that. It's very easy to hit. And you say services. And you can get news, stocks, sports, weather, horoscopes. You can say, what's the traffic like on my route home? What's the traffic like on my route to work? What's traffic like on the way to San Francisco? And it will tell you. You can have an in-dash display that does this, or you can have it read it to you as you drive. You can even have it text it to your mobile phone. How about that? And, of course, all the personalization is available online, so you don't have to do it in the car. When you're at home, you can even say, I'm going here, 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 here on Google Maps and send it to the car. I love what they're doing with Sync and Sync services. I encourage you to go to your Ford dealer and drive a 2012 Focus, awesome car today, or visit the website ford.com/technology. Some great stuff. And we'll get the video. I shot a bunch of video in these new cars so you can see me at work. Although, tell Tom, for some reason, I asked for tech news today and I got Freak-a-Leak. I don't know why.
Freak-a-Leak. Tom's looking at you.
I think the Universal Music Group has infiltrated even my Ford Sync. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Dave. That video's been pulled down. We have Ford.com/technology. We actually haven't talked about that issue. We should talk about it briefly. YouTube's screwing me and Tom and every freedom-loving American who wants the internet to be free and open. So you've heard the saga of Mega Upload. Did you guys talk about this last week?
We didn't, actually.
So Mega Upload is a site that some say is used for piracy. Certainly it's a way to upload large files. Although, who was it? 50 Cent? Snoop? Dr. Dre? Somebody said, oh, I use this all the time to share music with my buddies. I needed an update to Adobe Flash Player. So Mega Upload made a Mega Upload kind of promotional video with Will.i.am and a lot of big names. Who's it? Is Beyonce in that? No. I can't remember who's in the video. A lot of big names. And weirdly, even though Mega Upload says we own this video, we've got permission to use everything in this video, Universal Music Group just kind of took advantage of the fact that there's automated takedowns and took down somebody else's video, Mega Upload's video. They said, well, we don't like it. It's still down if you go there, which sucks. Tom Merritt on Tech News Today was talking about it this week. And he played the video, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They took Tech News Today down. So so here's the problem with this. First of all, MegaUpload.com says we have the rights to this video and it's illegally taken down from YouTube. Second, even if that weren't the case, this is a news show. It's a news story. We're using a clip of it in a news show, which is absolutely legal and fair use and always has been. Go home and watch the news tonight, and you'll see this happen all the time. This is completely permissible. They pulled down TNT. We appealed it, the automatic takedown. They put it back up, and then Universal Music Group filed an automatic injunction, took it down again. We've appealed that. Now they have 10 days to get a court order. And if they do pull it down again, and UMG, I encourage you to pull it down again, please. We will go to court because that is not okay. Now, unfortunately, and maybe Jeff, you know this better than I'm told that the fair use is a defense. It's not a,
yes.
So I can't use it proactively. I have to go to court.
Right. And the fair use, as Lawrence Luxig said, is a right to hire lawyers.
So that sucks because I don't want to spend a lot of money to have
but
the right.
You know, you have the incredible Twit army. You know, just today riding the PATH train in from New Jersey, I sit down and see a guy next to me. He's coding on his Mac. He looks over and he says, you Jeff Jarvis? this is the show. You have the Twit army, man. So the question is,
if it's expensive, we'll have to do a defense fund or not an offense fund.
Yeah.
But we will. But even if not, I'm going to pursue it because I just think that this is we cannot sit silent as stuff like this continues.
Right.
And they pull down a lot of our shows all the time. And I guess really what we have to do is go to Congress and say, dudes, you're killing online content.
Exactly. But here's the other thing I think we have to do is we have to give Google cover on this. And I'm not saying this is a Google fanboy, and I'm not defending what Google does automatically. Cory Doctorow has a piece in The Guardian right now talking about how YouTube's system is screwed up.
It's broken.
But what we have to do is put Google in a position where they say, whoa, UMG, we're going to get in an S-load of trouble for following your orders all the time. You know, come on, you're getting us in trouble here. Well, we've got to get Google in trouble. We've got to go protest.
Right.
These things happen in organized ways. Otherwise, Google's going to the path of least resistance, which is to listen to the big media when they're trying to do deals with. So we've got to create pressure on the other end. Time to bring the Twit army to march behind Tom.
Well, this would, if I can't think of a better reason to mobilize, I'm always very grateful that we have such a great community, an active community. And I don't like to mobilize them unnecessarily, but this really is an important
right. And I think in this case, what we're doing is we go to YouTube. I mean, going to Congress, you know, Occupy Washington. I think that if we go to YouTube and Google and say, you know, there's two sides to this, darn it.
Right.
And stop just going automatically to the big media side.
Right. And we're the future of media, damn it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what you're doing is you're empowering big media. At worst, you're empowering people like UMG. You're empowering content rights holders to squash the future. So let's knock that off, or we can't do our jobs. Now, I cannot look at YouTube as a revenue source because this happens at least, you know, weekly. On this show, it happens a lot because we play a lot of clips. It happens all the time on Twit. I don't know. Does it happen a lot to TNT for Tech News Tonight?
No, it actually doesn't. It's happened to us on Frame Rate. Hi, Leo. It's happened to us on Frame Rate a couple of times because we play movie trailers. That's murkier ground. With Tech News Today, we played a portion, not the entire video, in order to illustrate the news story, which we were commenting and critiquing on. That is absolutely fair use. Yes. I'm 99.9% certain we are in the right here. It's not a like, well, we were playing the trailer, but, you know, maybe it's not. No, this is what fair use exemption is carved out exactly for. And the way the law is written, Universal can legally get YouTube to take down our show until it is no longer relevant 10 days later with no chance of remediation.
Right.
The only chance of remediation we would have would be to go to court. If YouTube puts it back up after the 10 days, the only chance of remediation would be we would have to proactively sue Universal Music Group and try to prove in court that they, in bad faith, took us down. That's incredibly difficult to prove.
The typical fair use exemptions for this kind of thing are for criticism or comment. That was what that was. Or news reporting. That's what that was. Research and scholarship. Nonprofit educational uses. And parody. Any of those would be traditionally accepted by a court as a defense. That's the problem. The DMCA is written such a way that this takedown request is automated. It happens. YouTube just says yes. There's no human involved, which is why a company like UMG could pull something down that they don't even own. And then pull down a news show that covers the story, which is absolutely censorship. The whole reason UMG is doing this is not because piracy is involved here. They don't want you to hear the story.
Right.
And that's, I mean, appalling. This is censorship. This is them saying that's a story that doesn't reflect well on us. Make sure it doesn't get out.
So here's a question.
And we've got to get these stories
in. Down?
Well, I don't know. Should we?
Why don't you try it? If they can do it to you, why can't you do it to them?
Well, because I don't know if I want
to. Well, because they have better lawyers than us, so they can afford to take us to court and say, this was a bad faith takedown.
Right.
They said on This Week in Google that they were going to do this as a, you know, as a matter of retribution.
It's not about the outcome of the court case. It's about the public opinion.
Right.
And there was a case when it was in New Hampshire where some people did a eminent domain on the home of a judge who had ruled in favor of a company that was using eminent domain to take away people's homes. And so this would be a fantastic publicity stunt.
Well, I'm not going to do it as a publicity stunt. I just think we need to really stand up. And the problem is...
I don't think I would do that for that purpose, but I think you do need the publicity.
The problem is...
Don't do the stunt.
That it costs us money every time they do this. Because that's those 10 days go by. This stuff is like, fish wrap. Nobody's going to watch a news show that's 10 days old. So it's done. That means
Is there a restraint of trade action?
Yes. It costs me, every time they do something like this, thousands of dollars.
All right, Twit Army, we need good pro bono legal help on this for Leo et al., Leo and Tom et al.
Well, not yet. Let's see what happens.
We need some advice.
Oh, advice would be good.
Best paths. What are the options for Twit, and then choose the best options.
By the way, and we got so much to talk about, and we're already 15 minutes late. So, Tom, we're going to get to you in just a moment. The answer to the question, and it should be your number of the week, but it's not. I hope 8.
Go ahead.
Yes, 8. Larry, Sergey, and Eric Schmidt have 8 private jets between the three of them. That's why they're renovating for $33 million the airship hangar at Moffett Field. Anybody who lives in the Bay Area is driven by this ginormous hangar they used to put blimps in on Moffett Field. They're going to spend $33 million to renovate the 1930s Hangar 1. And that's where they're going to store their 8 planes.
Why? Because it's really cool.
Yes.
It's also really close.
They have, exactly. Okay. There's a modified Boeing 767. These aren't, we're not talking about G5s, baby. Modified Boeing 767. Two G5s. A 757. And apparently they've added a fighter jet.
Well, the Facebook is really bad.
Well, we said last week that Google's not a nuclear power. Maybe it is. Bombers next.
So that's 5, and apparently there's 3 more that are, you know, we're looking for. People are.
Are they personal property or company property?
Not clear. They do lease these back to NASA, apparently.
Yeah, NASA uses them as well as part of the deal to allow them to. Yeah, so it's they're kind of. And this is uncomfortable for NASA because here's this government agency that is favoring a specific company. I'm sure Larry Ellison would love to get his plane in there. I mean, there's all kinds of weird politics about this.
So the TechCrunch is reporting this, but the San Jose Mercury News said 8. TechCrunch found 5. We're still looking for the other 3. Maybe one of them is that giant plane that Paul Allen is building.
Oh, right.
That's an amazing story.
That's another story for another day because we got so much more to talk about, and I really want to get to Majel. We got to talk about Majel. That's it should be like a rap song.
Majel?
Is it Majel? It's Majel. Tom is the expert on geek culture.
Majel Barrett.
Majel Roddenberry.
Oh, you know
Major Barrett Roddenberry. And it's a new thing that Google's going to do, apparently. But before we do that, I do want to mention our friends at Newegg. If you've ever bought computer hardware or gadgets or cameras or anything really that with technology involved, you know about Newegg. Everybody who's into technology knows about Newegg. It's a place to go to get great deals on, I think, 85,000 products, 1.9 million customer reviews on their site. So you always know if what you're getting is going to do what it wants to do. The only problem I have with Newegg is my budget, because I could spend millions and I don't dare. I got to save some money for the UMG battle. Fortunately, you can trade in your used electronics for a Newegg gift card, and this is a great way to do it. Newegg.com/trade. They're using our old friends at Gazelle. So you can bring your old iPhones there, your old Kindles, your digital cameras, your D90 with lens, $171. Cybershot, $82. Kindle, $43. Droid Bionic, I would trade that in for a Nexus. You bet. The camera on that thing is you could wait a day for the camera to take a picture.
Awful.
It's horrible. So, but don't tell anybody because they're $290 for a Droid Bionic. So, $290 for a Droid Bionic. Newegg.com/trade. Get rid of the old. Bring in the new. Once you know, you Newegg. Newegg.com/trade. Just think of it next time you want to get something fun at Newegg for yourself. You know, I end up holiday shopping for myself because nobody's going to buy me the 8 gigs Corsair SD RAM stick that I want. So I do that for geeks. We have to buy for ourselves. Google Chrome 16 is out with multiple user profiles. That's a nice feature. Thank you, Google. Something Firefox has had for ages.
That is a neat
before
feature.
You move on from that, I have a theory about that, which is that if they can get everybody, I think this is what they're going to do with many, many of their online products and services and so on. Get you to add your password in order to use it. Because if you enter in your Google password, you are now using Google Plus.
Oh.
It's
all about the plus, baby, isn't it?
As soon as you do that, everywhere you go on Google Sites, it's going to show you how many notifications you have. You're going to put your name up there.
Yeah.
What's going on over there? You click it. They're going to suck everybody. You know, Google has way more than a billion users per month.
Where do I sign in? I'm not finding it on mine.
Go into the wrench menu, and they'll say, like, signed in as whoever you are, and then you can add new users there.
I don't get it there. I got version 16 and I'm not getting it.
Well, let me see here. Let's try this here. Okay, there's the wrench. And so I'm signed. See, I'm signed
yeah,
in as Leo.
I got
Leo
synced as, but I didn't get signed in.
No, you don't have the newest version. So here's what you do to make sure you get the. You go to Chrome, about Google Chrome, and
I got 16.
Checking for updates. 16.0.912.63.
I love the version numbers, by the way. The version numbers are like IP addresses.
It is. It's four, so it's a dotted quad. So update now. Of course, 912 would be illegal. But anyway, update now if you don't have
that's
it.
What and, I got.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you have what we have, which is signed in as?
Well, if you choose synced as, Jeff, what happens?
Nothing. I'm not getting these things. I'll find it. I'll figure it out, people. I'm sorry.
It does show up in your personal stuff and the preferences, how you're signed in. You can manage your synced data on Google Dashboard, but if you see here it says users, you're currently the only Google Chrome user. I can add a new user right here under personal stuff. Actually, my Chrome, for some reason on my Macs, is really slow right now, so I just started using Safari again. So there. And
you'll have to take the Omnibar for my cold.
I know. I hate that with Safari. Typing the... Type in a search term in the address bar and it doesn't
look. I know, it feels so old. I have to go
so
to the
old.
The Alt K or Control K or whatever it is to get to the search bar. I think that's a good theory though, Mike. I think that the plusification of everything continues. I think it makes a lot of sense that they want to know who you are. Add those plus one buttons everywhere. But it's
oh, no, super handy. They're tracking you everywhere. They
everywhere.
Know everything.
Well, my theory is that Google is heading toward having one product. They were initially a company with one product, which was search, and then they spun out one product after another, and now they're scattered all over the place and being threatened by Facebook, which is a single walled garden type of place where you use all these different things, but always inside the context of Facebook, and they found that that's very powerful. So what they're doing, the big strategy appears to be make everybody who uses Google anything a user of Google Plus. And it's a powerful strategy.
Brilliant.
Yeah. It is.
It's Clue.
It is.
Yeah.
One of the aspects about it that I think is underappreciated is that they're going to featureize everything. They're going to take things that are currently products elsewhere and make them Google Plus features. Now, you see them doing that with Hangouts, which is now, you know, Skype has been a product all these years. And now pretty much all the basic things that are available in Skype are now simple features that are already there, free, right there. You're already signed in, ready to go. Click a button. You're using the feature of Hangouts and so on. And so how do you exist as a product when your product is just a feature that everybody already has? And they're going to just lay waste to all these smaller companies, I think, that by simply by featureizing their products.
So you can now add Hangout to a post, or it actually is added automatically.
You can be having a conversation, click a Hangout button, and that conversation turns into
a live
video Hangout. Yeah.
Holy come on. Has that happened to you?
I got the link about half an hour before the show started.
Yeah, I'm getting it on my post, too.
Wow.
No, haven't tried it yet, though.
I haven't either. I'm seeing it actually on everyone's posts.
Yeah, I see it now. Yep. So Herbert posted this, Galaxy Nexus available tomorrow at Verizon. If I wanted to talk to Herbert about it, I just click the Hangout button, and it would say, Herbert, Leo wants to talk to you. I guess this is going to use Google Talk or what?
No, it's Hangouts.
Use Hangouts. And the other thing is that Herbert will see that a persistent button now on the right saying Leo's trying to have a Hangout with you or a call. Because you can also call phones
like
now.
Like,
thank
like
God
Skype.
No one's there.
but Hangouts is just a lot more kind of there all the time starting today.
That was kind of a Regis phone moment.
Well, I'm such a nerd because, you know, this is my problem with Hangouts, FaceTime, all this. I don't want to talk to anybody.
Yeah. Oh, really. No, you don't want to talk to anybody, Leo.
I talk.
Hang out all day.
I talk at people. I don't want to talk with people.
We want them to talk. Well, that's another thing they announced, actually. The ability to broadcast your Hangouts and then automatically record them to YouTube is something they announced today. They're rolling out to a lot more people. So, Leo, you will be one of those people, I guarantee it, because you have a lot of Circle friends on Google Plus. And so now
there's
you're
some Circle jerks, too, but most of them are
Circle
friends.
Jerks as well. But you could if you want to talk at people, Hangouts is a great way to do it. Just restrict who can get on the call.
I mute them.
And then you just broadcast.
I said this before. If I'd had this 5 years ago when we were starting Twit, this whole network would have been very, very different. Yes. We had to labor to get multiple people in video conferences and all that. This is like push a button. Well, by the way, I have an announcement. I think I can announce this. Trey Ratcliffe, the great photographer who was here yesterday for Twit Photo and has been doing at least weekly, sometimes twice weekly, Google Hangouts with other photographers. He's really been doing a show. Yeah. And I love it. And he's agreed to add it to the Twit Network. So we are going to do, in fact, exactly that. Where he's going to do Hangouts, but we're going to broadcast him. We're going to restore him. We're going to offer him his podcasts kind of automatically.
Fantastic.
That's great. Isn't that great? I think
that's wonderful.
It's a great experiment, and I'm very grateful to Trey. He actually came to us and said, we'd like to do that. I said, Trey, are you kidding? You got it.
Now, are you going to be able to add ads into that?
Well, Trey and I talked a little bit about how would we do ads. So I don't know. What I was thinking is, what if, okay, it's a photography show, so what if we got somebody like B&H Photo, which is a big photography salespeople, to say, sponsored by, brought to you by B&H Photo, and then maybe had just a little logo on the page or something. I don't want to interrupt. Yeah.
No, but it's the same as you do now. I mean, their host read.
Well, spot. I wasn't even thinking of that. Although you could have me as one of the nine. I could just be sitting there, and then Trey could say, well, now we're going to take a break, and click on me, and I get it big. Now I'm going to do an ad. I don't know.
If you're going to shoot on location, you're going to need to get there and afford the new Ford.
Exactly.
Mustang, we'll get you there fast.
Exactly. Exactly.
Ready for picks?
I know. They're trying to rush us along here.
Well, because
we have Chipotle news first.
Okay. Real quick.
So a manager of the store told me that they're going to bring back the chorizo because it's going to be part of the breakfast menu.
Yum.
That mollified Eileen was in such a hurry until you said that. Now she says, we can keep doing the show.
Yeah, tell us more.
Now, Twitter Chipotle tweets came in and said, well, not so fast. They're not everywhere. But I said, listen to your people. The people were going nuts for this.
Yes.
So, end of drinking game. Now on to
I don't even know what any of that means. I was going to talk about Majel.
Majel Barrett Roddenberry.
So it's just a rumor, but apparently Google will have, maybe even by the end of the year, this according to Android and me, a Siri-like dictation system that improves on the existing system, which is already pretty damn good. And they've been working on it for some time. An evolution of voice actions. The only difference with Siri and voice actions, as far as I'm concerned, is voice actions has limited vocabulary. Siri has more natural language. This would add natural language. So Google has to do this because Siri can disintermediate them. It can say, we'll search for it on Wolfram Alpha or Bing. Go ahead.
I have the feeling that Google is going to take this tool and Googleify it by essentially automating the process of finding out what real people say in real life and building those common phrases and responses in a hugely scaled version of that. So, and the power of that is that it's not just American English. Siri is this, English speaking person who speaks a few of the major dialects and essentially talks like an American. But imagine every little dialect, every little regional thing, it could detect how you talk and talk back at you in the same language.
You said this, Mike, when Siri came out, you said Siri's a game changer, but it ain't going to be Apple. In the long run, it's going to be somebody who has a lot of information. It's going to be Google. Yep.
Going to be Google. Yep.
It's going to be good. I agree with you. Right. And they're already pretty darn close. This ice cream sandwich is pretty darn close.
Yep.
So, Gina's tip of the week.
The Gmail iOS app just got another update. When it first launched, they had that bug that they had to pull it within a day, and the reception was kind of lukewarm. It doesn't have that many features. Well, it just got this new update with a couple of new features. It supports nested labels, and there's a new notification sound. But my new favorite feature is this thing called Scribbles. If you're composing a message in Gmail, this works especially well on your iPad because you get the bigger screen, but it works on the iPhone as well. You can sketch something out, like if you're sketching on like a napkin, or if you want to draw something real quick and attach it to your email really quickly. So it's kind of like a very basic paint tools. It's got colors and brushes and that kind of thing, and you can send it as an attachment to your email, which is just an image attachment, which is kind of fun little thing for kids, or if you're the kind of person who likes to do things visually. I just bought an This is a confession or admission. I just got a stylus for my iPad, which I know you're not supposed to get a stylus.
No.
I've been using some art apps, and I wanted a little more precision. So I've been drawing, a lot on my iPad. So I'm really excited about Scribbles. So that's in the new update to Gmail on iOS.
Which one did you get? Just out of curiosity.
I got the
bamboo.
That's the hot one right now.
So walk.
No, I think it's the Logitech. Is it Logitech? Okay. It's a silver one. I forget now. The Logitech
kind
stylus.
Of foamy at the end. Like
yeah,
a foam.
Kind of, yeah. Well, it's got kind of just like a rubber.
Yeah, I know which one you got. I can't remember the name because that's the one that originally came out.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is a Logitech.
By the way, this just in, it's snowing in Mountain View. They did this. Google does this every year. They bring in snow machines for their employees, and they've snowed on the honeycomb and the donut and the eclair and all the little Android gingerbread men.
I thought the ice cream was leaking.
It looks like it's the ice cream. The Froyo. Let's get Jeff's number. Actually, numbers.
Well, I was going to do five. The New York Times did this ridiculous fake trend story. They found five people who aren't on Facebook and called it a trend, and I hate that. I'm not going to do that.
There's 800 million people using it, five not. That's a trend.
Yeah. I was going to do 10 because this is the season of the Time Person Thing of the Year and 10 best lists and predictions, and I hate all that BS.
By the way, Time picked the right person.
Yeah, they did. The protesters.
I thought the protesters, which is the Time Person of the Year this year, is exactly right. Whether it's Tunisia, Syria, Egypt, or Zuccotti Park. I think it's the year of the protesters. Absolutely.
I think you're right. But here's the number I'm going to do, which is 500,000, which is how much Louis C.K. netted.
Yes!
Grossed for his video, just announced on his site. It means he netted.
In 3 days.
For 3 days, $200,000. Or as he said, after taxes, $75.
He actually, his math is completely wrong because he says at the beginning of the blog post, the costs of production were essentially covered by ticket prices to this show. So it's all profit or close to it.
It's all profit. $500,000. 110,000 copies, $5 each, $550,000.
People thought he was crazy doing this.
Some PayPal charges. The site cost $32,000, which is expensive, but he said it really had to be robust and good. And so he said he probably would have been paid a little bit more if a company had just paid him for the rights, but they would have charged everybody $20. Meanwhile, people are going to keep buying this. He's going to make an S-load.
This is the first 3 days.
3 days.
He's going to make $1 million on this thing, and it's going to change comedy on the net.
Yeah. So he's really happy he did it. It's an education. And what delights me so much about this is that I wish that Howard Stern had been somebody to prove that the net is ready for stars. We only have Glenn Beck. So now this is an antidote to Glenn Beck to say that, hey, stars, you really can do it on your own. To heck with SOPA. To heck with all this stuff.
This is where we're going.
Your fans will buy your stuff. Make it easy for them. And Louis C.K. is $500,000 richer because of it.
He is. I watched last night. I watched like eight Louis episodes. He is so smart.
Show.
So funny, so creative, and he's smart enough, and I know that he's not a super techie, but he's smart enough to trust his gut and say, I bet if I charge $5, I have no DRM, I have no copy protection, I think I can do okay. He did more than okay. Good for you.
So if people no doubt did copy it and did pass it around for free, he still made $500,000, and his fans love him, and he found new fans, and this is a smart way to go.
Yep.
And he did it right, too. He did it kind of in the same way you do it, Leo, which is that, you're broadcasting before and after the show. There's a lot of transparency. The live audience can come in. Just, it's a very transparent and open process. And he did the same thing. They filmed him in the beginning walking down the street. And you're like, oh, he's walking down the street. And then he walks up to the theater where the show is taking place. And walks in the front door of the theater. Doesn't go, not a limo in the back, but walks in the front door of the theater, shaking hands. Everybody's patting him on the back. Then when he starts the show, there's no announcer, there's no opening act, nothing. He just walks out on the stage, asks people not to use their cell phones, and then does his thing and walks off. And that was it. It was totally bare bones.
Love it.
Really, really well
really,
done.
Really, really great. By the way, maybe he's more techie than I thought because 2 days ago he did a Reddit AMA, which is Ask Me Anything. Hi, I'm Louis C.K., and this is a thing.
He said he had no idea what AMA was, but he was going to try and do it anyway.
Somebody's telling him. He's got, I don't know what. Somebody's telling him. He's geeky in the sense he gets it. He gets it. Yeah. This is changing. And
he understands. It's respect for his fans.
He's a pioneer. And to take somebody of his stature, to take that chance and make it work is huge. Yeah. Huge. Mike, did you have a tip or anything you'd like to pass along?
I do. How to do a poll on Google Plus.
Cool.
There isn't a plug-in, but what you can do is you ask your question, you know, what flavor ice cream do you like, chocolate, vanilla, strawberry, and then you put in the comments what the answers are, the options, one for each option. So chocolate is one, vanilla, and so on. And then people can vote by clicking plus one. What you then do is you turn off comments. You inform people in the post that comments are off, so don't try to comment, and vote by clicking plus one. And then what you end up with is 340 people like this one, 200 people like that one, and you can do a poll of any length.
I'm going to see are there any polls that you've done recently on here?
I have pretty recently, maybe 3 or 4 days ago. Of course, I post 1,000 things a day.
That's the problem. You write so much on here.
But you could do your own poll, actually. It's instantaneous, but it's it really works, and people really enjoy it. And it's a great way to, you know, if you have a really contentious issue like religion or Android versus iOS, you end up with so many comments, nobody could possibly read them all. But a poll, everybody can get the snapshot of
And are people pretty ruley? I mean, do they follow the rules and do it, or do they start commenting? Because if they start commenting, you could screw the thing up.
You turn comments off.
Oh!
It's one of the features, and you just... Got it. Sometimes people post a comment before you can turn them off because you're typing as fast as you can.
Right.
And then you just delete them. And people seem to understand. And you get a lot of shares for these polls, which amplifies the response. So it works, and it's a lot of fun, and it's still a pretty new practice. So people really like it.
I like it. That's Mike Elgin, the world's only lovable technology writer, Computer World, and of course Google Plus.
Plus
in fact,
Mike
he makes his newsletter out of it, Elgin.com.
Right.
Just go there, you'll find him. Thank you, Mike, for being here. Always a great pleasure to have you.
Pleasure was all mine.
Yeah. This is such a good show. We didn't even get to the new Twitter. We had so much to talk about.
Yeah.
We'll just come back and do it again next week. Actually, I won't be here next week. Tom will be back, which means TNT will start on time for a change.
Can we show the lizard video?
Yeah.
Really
sure.
fast.
Awesome.
Really,
awesome.
Really fast.
We'll close
I swear
with that.
We won't hold up TNT anymore.
Oh,
but
why
just
not?
Signing off, I think we have to show this lizard video.
What was I going to say? I was going to say...
The 28th, are we going to do a show?
28th, we are going to do a show if you guys are up for it.
Gina can't because she'll be flying. I'm happy to do it.
Be on a plane.
I propose, Leo, that it is a tribute to Gina show.
Sounds good to me.
No, that is absolutely not allowed.
But we love you, Gina. Oh, yes, we do.
I'll be on the plane very nervous about what's happening on the ground.
We love you, Gina. We do. Kotke.org. Lizard plays ant-crushing game. Do I need audio for this? Because I won't have it.
No.
You don't need audio.
On an Android tablet. See, lizards, even lizards. Oh, I'm the GeicoGecko. Oh, I hate ants. I'm going to squish these ants right now. Oh, oh, dead ants.
He's really good.
Dead ants. They're good. Oh, I love them. More ants. They keep coming off the screen, but they don't taste like anything. This is
Thank
so
you for indulging
weird.
Me.
Isn't this great?
Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time. We do this show every Wednesday, by the way, at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, 2100 UTC at twit.tv. If you miss the show, you can catch the video after the fact. Ooh, now he's going to have lizard juice all over his screen. you know what's great? He's not fooled by the non-ant stuff. Well, there he was. Game over, man. Game over. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Oh, I didn't see the guy spraying him.
Oh, with pepper spray.
So, yeah, I mean, I think Tom is really being, not just Tom, all of us.
Yep.
And we've appealed twice now. How many times have we appealed, Tom?
Yeah, so there's the robotic takedown we appealed.
We appealed the robotic takedown.
The actual DMCA takedown kicks in when Universal resubmits.
Right.
And so we have actually appealed that. Universal has 10 days to respond to that with a court order, or our show goes back up.
Oh, that's good news. So I'm sure you didn't hear that, but I will re-explain. And we do this. It happens frequently in our news shows because we put clips in there. In this case, the clip Tom used is the famous mega upload video on YouTube that had everything in there, was approved by the owners of the content. By
well, Mega Upload
approval.
They filed a waiver from Will.i.am today in court. So every
personality in there has said, yes, you may use my stuff. The Universal Music Group still pulled it down, and Google acceded to that. Now, maybe the dispute is, well, these are artists that do not have the right to say that.
Yeah, there could be all kinds of reasons Universal gets to say that Mega Upload can't use that footage, and that can be determined in court, but they shouldn't be able to pull down a daily news show because they are commenting and critiquing.
Yes, so there's two sides. There's two parts in our favor. One is that Mega Upload says that we own the content. So who is UMG to talk about somebody else's content and pull it down, and why YouTube lets them is beyond me. But then there's an exemption for us. We're news shows, and we're showing these clips in that context. We're not using them to dress up the show. We're talking about the news, and that's fair use. Now, the problem with fair use is it's not a proactive defense. It's a defense. It's not a...
And YouTube's following the DMCA.
They're doing what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, they're saying this is what we have to do to maintain our ability to stay online.
Well, I certainly don't want YouTube to disappear, but what it means...
UMG can censor anybody anytime they want by claiming there's a copyright violation.
So then it's automatically taken down. We appeal that. YouTube then goes back to UMG, right? And then there's an official DMCA takedown, which they probably have like a stack of them by the door, and they just go, yeah, here. And then, so then we appealed again, and now there's a 10-day period in which the UMG would now have to go to a judge?
Yeah, they'd have to get an injunction. Saying
against
no,
us,
TWiT is breaking the law, and they have to pull this down. Otherwise, YouTube puts it back up.
So then, if that happens, then we will go to court.
No,
right?
It just stays down at that point. We wouldn't necessarily have to do anything. Unless we want to fight it.
I would like to fight it.
Yeah, then we would have to go to court and say no, this is wrong.
Okay, so we will pursue that. You have my commitment.
My guess is Universal won't file the injunction.
Because they don't care. 10 days later, it's all over.
It's not worth their time. Exactly. And that's the problem with the law is it gets to take a daily news show down for 10 days with no actual evidence.
So that happens to us on TWiT almost every other show. And if a show of TWiT, for instance, is down 10 days, we've lost most of the revenue. Same thing for TNT. You're a daily show, but a weekly show, that's really...
It really is affecting the business. Yeah. Addie Pie in the chat just put up a link for a piece that Cory Doctorow wrote in The Guardian.
Yeah. Saying the content system sucks.
Yeah.
Which it does. But, you know, I guess it's... I don't know. Is it incumbent on Google to come up with something better?
What's it incumbent on Congress?
Congress needs to come. Yeah, let's.
YouTube's
they're doing it. It's called SOPA. It's wonderful.
Much better.
That's right. It's being voted on today.
And by the way, you know who will be exempt? .com.net.org, but not .tv. So we're still screwed.
Yeah, don't we follow under the rules of Tuvalu in that case?
Yes. Tuvalu decides what's legal here, baby. We should just move the damn show to Tuvalu.
I'm with you.
Who's up for going to the Pacific Islands? It's warm there, right? It's sinking.
Those are my people.
It's sinking.
Which is why we should go to TWiT Island.
So we'd have to kind of put, I don't know what, but it's sinking. You know, it's going to be gone in a few years.
We can sell more bricks.
Sell more bricks.